and sustainable ingredients available. Choose to host in one of Five Star's elegant on-site venues or a picturesque off-site location, and let them create a seamless and stress-free experience for you and your guests. Start creating unforgettable memories at fivestarcatering.com.
CISL Vancouver is Sportsnet 650, the official home of the Canucks. Listen live online at sportsnet650.ca or download the podcasts and don't miss a minute.
Everybody, welcome to the first Canucks Talk of 2025 here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. Thomas Drance, of course, is here as well. He covers the team for The Athletic, and we are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650, that is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drance, happy new year, man.
Happy new year to you, buddy. Good to be back with you doing this show. I missed you,
were hard over the holidays.
I kept working a little bit, yeah. But you know what? I don't have kids or a life, so I'm happy to do
and
it.
And you're single.
I'm not right now. Love you, honey. And I'm single. So, yeah, I had a lonely Christmas. Lots of TV dinners and college football
Classic
bowl games.
Classic lonely bachelor Christmas.
I had a delightful holiday. I hope you and the family had a blast.
Absolutely.
And you know, looking forward to taking in the year 2025 with all our listeners. If the start of the Canucks new year is any indication, we're in for some fireworks.
Yeah, this is a... This is a special day to come back for January 2nd, first show of the day. Man, there's a lot going on. It's also a Canucks game day. So, of course, we will talk about that as well. They're taking on the Seattle Kraken in Seattle. First half of a back-to-back.
Whatever this version of the Canucks team is taking on,
they will be in Seattle. And we'll talk to Allison Lucan at 1 o'clock. Of course, she covers the Kraken. I'm curious to get her take on the Canucks, though, as well, and kind of what she's seen from the team this year. But we'll do that at 1 o'clock. There's just so much to get into today. So let's go right to the whiteboard here.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
All right, it is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 2nd, 2025.
Where are we going to start?
Well, I guess we have to start with the headlines.
Are we going to start with Bo Horvat?
Nick Kiprios?
Which, by the way, did you remember that Brad Richardson had a second tour?
No, I saw Brad Richards and I was like, didn't you play here in like 2015? What are you talking about?
Are you sure you're not talking about the feud between Sean Matthias and Zach Cassian?
I was like, you don't know either of these guys. What are you on about, Brad Richardson?
It honestly took me, I'm actually a little embarrassed by, because Brad Richardson was a dude. Brad Richardson was a very sick player during his first tour of duty with the Canucks. Obviously also had a 4-goal game against the Canucks that effectively ended one of those, you know, like slim sliver of playoff hopes that this team had during sort of that run of dark days. But yeah, I mean, so we've literally got insiders and former players, former Canucks, coming out of the woodwork now to chime in.
En masse.
So if you thought en masse,
it is true.
You're not wrong. It's 100%. It's like one of those pop songs, you know, where like a pop song that's being performed live at a sporting event, and to signal that it's elevated, it's like for the final chorus, they bring out a choir. And it's like a bunch of children who are like, under the bridge downtown. that's what's going on. We're at the choir chimes in to a Red Hot Chili Peppers track part of this story.
Yeah, that's what it, no. It's it, it it and it really
you,
has.
You really let me hang myself with that twisted metaphor.
I was talking to the control room.
My God,
I wasn't with it to jump in and save
like,
you.
I was just like, is this guy gonna bail me out here?
No, or, I'm not. Sorry, I'm taking care of other business. You're on your own.
That's bad teammate stuff, man.
Well, fitting. Right. It's going around these days. Okay, all right. I guess we should run through some headlines really quick, but I don't even know.
No, the headline is this.
It's so blurred. Like, the notion of, like, headlines and rumors and reports is so blurred at this point. You know what I mean?
Let's just go factual recitation about what people are talking about. I want to, like, I'm happy to put this editorial spin on it. Mm-hmm. I am so sick of this. Okay? From a Jimmy's and Joe's perspective, the Canucks looked hapless against the Flames. Mm-hmm. They, I think, are going to be roughly equivalent in terms of their true talent level and their chances of beating the Seattle Kraken tonight as the Anaheim Ducks would against the Seattle Kraken in a road game. Now, I don't think that's who the Canucks are. Mm-hmm. This is a small interlude where they're playing short a superstar level center and a top pair, an entire top pair. Mm-hmm.
Including the reigning Norris Trophy winner.
Yeah, including Quinn Hughes, who is a top pair, a host to and of himself.
Yep.
But that's sort of how grim this is from a hockey perspective. And the losing that this team is doing, 3 wins since December 8th, even though they have 10 points across 11 games over that stretch, managing their losses expertly, right? That's what's fueling this more than anything. I'm pretty confident. Like, I know the losing fuels Alvin sort of recreating the story too with his interview. And the sideshow stuff is what we're talking about because the on-ice product is so uninspired. You know that if the Canucks could reel off 3 wins in a row, this conversation shifts. And right now, 3 in a row, my God, I'd take a period in which they outshoot the Kraken tonight.
Yeah, they have 1 win in their last 6. And not all of those have been missing Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, right? But some of them have.
But the last 2 have. And yes. So anyway, let's go through a factual recitation so that people listening to the whiteboard are like up to date with the dominant conversation around the Canucks. And let's not put too much spin on the ball beyond the jokes that we've made already because, God, this is exhausting.
It's pretty wild. Just the sheer volume of it. And okay, so we'll go through. So let's go back. And we don't have to go back all the way to the, you know, quote unquote, the beginning or whatever. No. But
while we were gone,
this cycle, this kind of fresh cycle of it, probably we can pinpoint the start to Patrick Alvin's interview with our colleague Ian McIntyre, right? And he, you know, was not shy about offering criticism of many different facets of the team, you know, even pressed, are you glass half empty or glass half full on the team this season? He chose glass half empty, right? Seeing more negatives than positives. But especially criticism of his top forwards and especially Elias Pettersson, right? Saying that he needs to mature, but he needs to, you know, face the music when things aren't going well, suggesting maybe he thought it would be easy. Pretty pointed criticism, pointed commentary about Elias Pettersson, even going so far, and I think this is really significant, as leaving the door open to trading Elias Pettersson, right? Not shutting it down. Now, leaving the door open is a very broad thing, right? It could be leaving the door open just the tiniest little sliver, but it wasn't slamming the door shut. That's for sure.
It was definitely a message sent as a sandwich, right? Where it like starts with a pretty harsh point about Elias Pettersson. And then there's the meat, which was an awful lot of praise for how much he believes in Elias Pettersson. Mm-hmm. And then at the back end, a refusal. I suppose anything is possible. Mm-hmm.
So usually you do the sandwich the other way.
Yeah,
you start with the compliment.
Well, no,
then you put the the point of improvement. Then you end with another compliment.
That's
this
true.
Was reversed.
Right.
This was the inverse.
This was a deconstructed compliment sandwich.
So I don't know what that tells us, that he recreated the sandwich recipe for Elias Pettersson. So anyway, so you hear that type of commentary from the general manager, and that's significant. And then over the last couple of days, it has been this avalanche of people around the league weighing in, offering commentary, whether it's firsthand, what they're hearing, speculation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So why don't we divvy this up really quickly?
Okay.
And let's handle the former players as news, and let's handle the reports in the broadsheet. And we'll sort of get to that quickly. So the former players angle, Brad Richardson, former Canuck, 2 tours of duty, one in which he was like a sick third line center on a playoff caliber team toward the end of the Sedin era. A club opted to sign Spezza and Dorsett and let him and traded Nick Bonino, traded Jared McCann. A lot of regrettable moves in there, man. Anyway, Brad walking away from Brad Richardson was among those bad calls, and maybe one that we don't talk about enough, to be totally honest with you. He came back as sort of, I think he was a waiver claim after the Canucks sold some players sort of at the deadline ahead of the final push, ultimately
of the Boudreaux bump
of the Bruce There It Is era. And he joined the, it was the Shane O'Brien, Scott Upshaw, a bunch of other former
missing
Canucks.
Curfew. Yeah,
missing
I know.
Curfew.
Yeah.
Three guys, like, man, an incredible run of Canucks resumes on this list. And he noted that talking about his time playing with the two, right? He said, I was in the dressing room with those guys. And he said, I love JT, love him. He's an effing animal. And I even told him, you're too hard on this kid. You're too hard on him. I know you're saying exactly what I think, but he's a kid that when you're on him, he's going to shut it down. I told him, like, hey, you're going to lose this guy if you keep doing it. That's what I said to him. Look, this is an incredible, like, firsthand account. We very rarely get this type of insight, but it is 2 years dated, right?
No, it's 2 years. And
in the time since, they've acknowledged the issue and then had their captain and head coach discuss the issue and then outright denied the issue. And then the issue is continuing to linger as it's being talked about. I think there's all sorts of ways that it's perfectly reasonable to square those facts, but I'm not going to go into the he said, she said. More than anything else, this is just, I think, a fascinating data point and insight into a dynamic that everyone is talking about. But also, you know, I think an important qualifier to put on it is it's a personal account from two and a half years ago.
Yep. And again, you know, not that this attacks his credibility or anything, but it was a 17-game stint. So could the relationship have been a bit of low ebb in that time? You know what I mean? Like, there's all these caveats that I think are fair to take into account. Not that it means he's not telling the truth or he doesn't have valuable insight. But as you said, 2 years ago, relatively short, it hits different than if this was, you know, Alex Edler coming out or something,
oh,
right?
Man.
Who'd played multiple seasons with them and had really been in there. You know what I mean? Like, that's a different type of thing. Not to say that and therefore ignore what Brad Richardson is saying, but it's just part of putting it into context. And as you said,
and we don't
get it a lot from ex-players like that.
And we also have to weight it heavily because he's still watching.
Yep.
He's like, you know, this is an opinion from someone who knows the people personally as teammates.
Yep.
So, you know, we're still waiting it, but I do think it makes sense to just contextualize the time frame in which his, you know, bird's eye view or his inside view was sort of at its most potent.
So the other former player weighing in, and this is one much stronger connection, is former Canucks captain, now with the New York Islanders, Bo Horvat, asked about it. Stefan Rosner of the Hockey News, who covers the Islanders, getting Bo Horvat to go on record at some length about this. But I do, I had to chuckle because...
Oh, there's so much to chuckle about.
I was not expecting, it wasn't even like in my... I hadn't even considered the idea that Bo Horvat could come out and weigh in on this. It just seems so out of left field. It's like, remember me, guys?
Yeah.
I've got thoughts about this.
It's like in you know, the original Mortal Kombat game where you've got that random character that just chimes in on the fight for no reason and is like,
okay, sure. It's exactly like that.
That's Bo Horvat.
Yeah. But then you open the article and it's like, oh, right, Bo Horvat. He doesn't say stuff. And he's doing, like, I don't know if this is how he is still in Long Island, right? If he conducts every interview and every media availability like this. But it feels... It almost like he put his Vancouver cap back on, right? And he's like, okay, I'm addressing something in Vancouver. I'm going to go back into Vancouver mode.
I don't know if he's ever taken it off.
And I'm going to just... play things as straight as possible, as calm as possible. And he says, you know, hey, it's been blown out of proportion.
Yep.
I have a lot of respect for both guys. Good relationship with JT, had a good relationship with Pettersson. Goes as far to say, you know, if any two guys or if anybody can handle it, those guys can. And basically just has a ton of praise for both guys and their ability on the ice and his relationship with them off the ice.
Well, first, the only thing he's really wrong about is if anyone can handle it, those guys can. It's like, I think you can, man. Like, I'm pretty sure this, like, let's turn down the temperature and just, like, say the right thing and give people something to talk about. But it's actually nothing inflammatory whatsoever and makes it seem normal. You know, Bo Horvat could spin, man.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell this guy shared a locker room with Henrik Daniel, Chris Tanev and company, right? Like, this guy can spin and he spun well. So, yeah. I think those are the headlines. Multiple former Canucks teammates chime in on Miller and Pettersson across a dizzying 24-hour span. I think that's the headline that we should sort of go with and close it there.
Yeah.
And then why don't we just get straight to the broadsheet?
Yeah, we'll go right to, like, the broadsheet. We can.
We barely need to talk about the game.
Pan all the game day stuff for later on in the show. But we'll go right to the broadsheet. And there's a lot to talk about here as well. I want to start by playing what I found to be maybe one of the best kind of summations of this situation, where this team stands, that we've gotten from an insider recently. And it's Elliot Friedman, who was earlier today on the Fan Hockey Show with Mike Fuda and Matt Marchese. And here is what Elliot Friedman had to say about how he sees the situation with the Canucks right now.
I think in their eyes, it's not even so much about choosing one over the other. It's about, I cannot believe that we still have to deal with this. And the more I thought about what Tocchet had said and what Hughes said, the more I think that that's how they think too. Like, really? This is still a thing? And, you know, the situations are a little bit different in the sense that Pettersson has no control until July 1st and Miller does. But I believe this. I believe everybody knows that Vancouver is opening to listen. I believe that are open to listening. I believe that they have already on both players and will continue to do so. But I still think that Vancouver's preference is that this solves, it works, that the two of them, like, both, like, for lack of a better term, grow up and figure it out, because they realize these are hard trades to win. But I think the difference now, as I said a couple weeks ago on Hockey Night, is that the stress of it all and the fact it's still a thing has begun to spill over elsewhere into the organization. And to me, it's clearly bothering Tocchet that this is still a thing. I believe it's bothering Hughes that it's still a thing. And now it's just spread where everybody has to deal with it. And I think that's what this is all about.
So that's Elliot Friedman earlier today. And again, the keys there, basically saying the Canucks are open to listening. They have been listening on both players, but obviously their preference is that they move forward, which is no surprise. They signed both of these guys to big long-term extensions. Pettersson, less than a year ago, they signed him to a big long-term extension. But also, I think one of the really interesting parts of that clip is that the idea that this is spilling over. This is not just a self-contained issue between Miller and Pettersson, to the extent that it is an issue. But as Friedman says, he believes it's bothering Tocchet. He believes it's bothering Quinn Hughes. Those are two of the absolute key people in your organization, your coach and your captain.
Which I think would also, you know, you take that Friedman comment, you take that commentary from Friedman and filter it through the absolute mysterious prism of why Hughes and Tocchet would say one thing and Miller and Pettersson would say something pretty different, right? In terms of the when questioned about the topic. And, you know, I think there's some interesting reading between the lines that our listeners can do, if sort of filtering Friedman's update through that prism. Look, if this team ultimately has to rip the Band-Aid off and dissemble this core because they can't coexist in a winning way, what are we doing here?
Oof.
What are we doing here? So obviously that's not how you want to play this. Obviously, that's not how you want to play this. We know how talented this group of players is when they're all pulling on the rope. And I think one thing that, you know, we shouldn't ignore here is part of the reason this has, again, come to the forefront of the conversation is, well, this team's only had 7 games of Demko this season.
Mm-hmm.
JT Miller has, what, 2 5-on-5 goals. He hasn't beaten a goalie in 20 games. He took a 10-game leave. He hasn't put together an elite season. Even if he had played all the games, like his point per 82 pace this season is what? 75, mm-hmm. 76, something like that. Like, he hasn't even been point per game. I don't have to tell you that Pettersson hasn't been his imperious dominant self in, well, we're getting pretty close to 12 months, like,
yeah,
11 months for sure now. So, you know, I think that if this team was getting one more star-like level contribution from one of those guys, they probably have 10 more points. This is probably a totally different story. Maybe,
yeah,
5 more points.
And part of what Elliot Friedman said before we ran the clip that we ran was the organization thought like this was in the past because of the success of last year. And I think that's related to what you're saying, right? You have this success, you get off to this incredible start, and it becomes a lot easier for everyone to pull in the same direction, for everyone to be good, to have that dynamic where, okay, maybe we're not best friends, but we can work together, we can play together, we respect each other. It's harder when that when things aren't going your way and when you are dealing with a whole bunch of absences and guys not playing well and all of that. And to pivot to a report or commentary, at least from another very well-connected insider, and I want to read this text from Dalvier, who says, am I to believe that the situation between JT and Petey changed significantly since last season, or is the team simply not winning like they were last season, and as a result, there's noise? If the team is winning, no one cares if players don't like each other, which aligns with what you're saying.
Well,
and
but I do also think the vibe is so much different, and where you get to where it matters is not that this team hasn't been winning games. It's that the effort has been inconsistent, right? It's that there has been cause to wonder when this team gets Dakota Joshua back and doesn't have any sort of emotional response, or when they get Thatcher Demko back and they don't have any sort of emotional response, or when they face the Edmonton Oilers, who eliminated them playoffs, and they don't bring their best that night, or Quinn Hughes's brothers are in town and they don't bring their best that night. Like, it's fair to be like, hey, does this team struggle to compete for one another? I think that's where this story becomes more than just the, like, idle, pernicious gossip, and becomes something where it's like, okay, but is that impacting what we're seeing on the ice? Because what we're seeing on this on the ice is a group that doesn't seem to have every night competitive focus. Is this why? Right? And I think that's what makes this story something that actually soaks up as much oxygen as it does, as opposed to it being, you know, frankly, like toxic, gossipy speculation.
And connected to that, I think, is what Frank Saravalli had to say on Halford and Brough this morning, and, you know, asked about it, of course, as you would expect. And I thought it was really interesting because Frank basically said, you know, look, I've been doing all the digging I can and doing my homework and trying to figure this out, and he has not been able to find evidence of some sort of flashpoint or incident that has caused this to come up again this season, right? Which I find really fascinating. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist, just that Frank hasn't been able to identify it or no one's told him about it. But I do think that gets to this kind of lingering question, which Dalvier is addressing, and, you know, we're all kind of wondering, which is why now? And it sounds like the organization is wondering that. Like, what happened to put this in the spotlight, to make it an issue that's preventing these guys from playing for each other potentially in a way that it wasn't preventing them last season? That's a mystery. I think it's one of the key mysteries and questions that a lot of fans have about this story. Okay, so that's Saravalli, that's Friedman. Believe it or not, we got two more reports to address. Nick Kiprios, of course, hosts Kipper and Bourne on the Fan 590, also writes a regular column in the Toronto Star, includes this tidbit, which is that the Canucks are leaning toward a major roster change. And he adds, don't be surprised if we start hearing the Canucks are willing to take calls on Miller. And in fact, we have now already heard that, because not long after that, Elliot Friedman said they're listening on both players. So the prophecy has been fulfilled from Nick Kiprios. We've heard it.
Well done. And then what's the other one? You had another?
The other one is Paul Bissonnette on Spit and Chicklets, again, saying that he keeps hearing that Rangers to JT Miller connection, and suggesting that Rangers general manager Chris Drury still covets JT Miller. And
did,
what was
did
it?
Did he say
it?
He no, said, he didn't Paul say, Bissonnette
he
said,
didn't say covets.
Still covets.
No, I put that through my translator. It was okay. Something about wanting him bad, I believe. That was what Biz Nasty had to say.
There we go.
Are we 2 years out from the peak, or 3 years out now from peak JT Miller to Rangers conversation? I think it's three.
God, I mean, it was long ago enough that people were like, Kratzoff.
Yeah, that's true.
And now the Canucks still have his rights. All right, let's line up. We know that Demko's starting.
Yeah.
Do we know anything else?
I don't think so. Didn't see any reports from morning skate. They did skate.
We're going to see Brisebois in for Brännström. That's the one I'm wondering about.
Oh boy.
If that happens, I think there's an argument to be made that Noah Juulsen will be the best puck mover among Vancouver's D. So we'll see. We'll see. We don't know that. I want to be very clear. We don't know that Brännström's out, but I'm curious to see when and how Guillaume Brisebois mixes in for the Canucks. I think they'll be excited to see him. And then playoff odds?
Playoff odds. So you can do bad news, good news here. Bad news is that the Canucks have dropped to a 77% chance to make the playoffs per Dom Lucision's model. They've spent most of the season above 90%. Of course, even in the standings, they're basically in a dead
heat.
He has
them at
77% chance to make the playoffs.
Pretty significant drop.
Pretty significant drop.
The model is reacting quickly as the Canucks' pool of unspectacular, like genuinely concerning five-on-five play sort of expands.
And they're basically in a dead heat with Calgary for the final wild card spot right now. 42 points in 36 games for the Canucks, 43 and 37
for
Calgary.
What's the projected point totals for Calgary? And
so the good news, if you're following Dom's model, is that the Canucks are at 77%. The next closest Western Conference team is Utah at 21%. They're projected to finish 8 points behind the Canucks. Canucks at 97 points, Utah at 89. He still has the Flames finishing at 87 points and a 13% chance to make the playoffs. So
I think that's perfectly fair if you want to put
some weight and put some stock into Dom's model. Yes, the Canucks playoff odds have dropped pretty precipitously here, but they're still well ahead of their closest competition, and the model is not convinced by any of Utah, Calgary, St. Louis, or certainly the Kraken, the chasing pack in the Western Conference.
Yeah, it's and for me, it's one of Utah, who've stumbled pretty significantly over the last 10 days, and Calgary, who have somehow not. Betting odds? Canucks are 25-1 right now. Consensus Stanley Cup odds. You'll find them listed as high as 28-1, plus 2,800 in some books. That puts them sort of in the company of like the Kings. They're now behind teams like the Capitals, the Wild, the Lightning, the Jets. Mm-hmm. In terms of their Stanley Cup odds, they're outside the top 10, where they haven't been for much of the season. Tonight, by the way, they are pick 'em, basically, against the Kraken. They're actually slightly favored, minus 115, Kraken minus 105. So that's some good news there. I do want to note, though, where I think this is really interesting is the odds to make the playoffs. Right? Mm-hmm. Because Dom has them at, what, 77%? Most places right now, you're sort of getting a consensus of minus 220 to make the playoffs. That's an implied probability that's closer to the low 70s. Like, back of the napkin, that's like 71% implied probability. So Dom's model still remains more bullish than the gambling markets. I've talked at length about how Dom's model doesn't price in regression the way I'd like it to. So I actually still think there's some noise from Vancouver's stunning performance throughout the last season that maybe causes them to be a little bit higher. You'll see models like Money Puck have the Canucks sub 50% now. So in any event, what we know from the gambling odds is we're probably going to be talking playoff race over the course of the next 5 weeks, unless the Canucks can get their guys back and get winning a lot of games.
All right, that is the whiteboard, jam-packed with lots of stuff today. We will continue the conversation on the other side. Look ahead to the game against the Kraken and the Canucks. I want to do a little bit of a just look ahead to 2025 here on our first show of 2025, what the rest of this season holds, what they need to do in the near term as well to keep this, or to try to make this season a success. Lots more coming up here. You can text in as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.